What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hi, I'm Dr. Will Cole. This podcast is the manifesto for a new breed of health seekers. This is The Art of Being Well. What's up, everyone? It's Dr. Will Cole, and welcome to The Art of Being Well. I am a leading functional medicine expert. I consult people around the world via webcam. I actually started one of the first functional medicine telehealth centers in the world over a decade ago, and I'm a New York Times bestselling author. I wrote my newest book, Intuitive Fasting and Ketotarian and the Inflammation Spectrum. If you want to learn more about my clinical work, the telehealth center, or the books, and there's loads of free content there as well, you can check it all out at drwillcole.com. That's drwillcole.com. All right, my friends, today is a solo deep dive episode. You guys love these episodes. Normally, I'm talking to different people within the health and wellness world and really going into their space and learning about them. So you can hear all these different facets of wellness and the art of being well in many different forms and many different lights. But intermittently, amongst your regular episodes on The Art of Being Well, I've been doing these deep dive topics about something specific in functional medicine where you can really geek out with me about the things that I see 11 hours a day. I mean, from 8 a.m. to most nights, 7 p.m., I'm consulting patients online and I look at labs all day long. I look at really complex cases all day long for the past 11, 12 years. So this is something that I have a lot to talk about. And today we're going to talk about mycotoxins or mold toxins. This is one of the most common underlying issues that oftentimes get missed because I'm dealing with people that are struggling with things like, well, generally just different inflammatory problems, but more specifically things like chronic fatigue issues, anxiety, depression, brain fog, many different types of autoimmune issues, and just stubborn problems that despite eating better than most people, doing all the wellnessy things, they aren't getting where they need to be. They're spinning their wheels. They probably are better off than they would be if they weren't doing all these good things, but they're still struggling. And that's why I'm talking to them online. And mycotoxins is one component that we need to take into consideration for many people. And it's not being talked about enough. And this episode is all you're gonna learn so much. It's gonna be your go-to episode when it comes to all things mycotoxin, mold toxicity, things that can trigger autoimmune issues and other inflammatory problems. So you can go back and re-listen to this as many times as you need to, share it with your friends and family that are going through these problems because it's so, so important and not enough people know about the hidden world of mycotoxins. In reality, mold can trigger, exacerbate, or perpetuate this inflammatory storm that so many people are struggling with. I mean, it's estimated that 50 million Americans have an autoimmune condition, that about 80% of the world is struggling with some metabolic issue. And certainly I'm not saying that mold toxicity is driving everyone's problem, but it's a component for many people and it's not being looked at because it can hide right in your home, your school, your workplace, even your car, I've seen. And it's important for people to really to look around their living spaces, to especially if they're struggling with different autoimmune issues or chronic fatigue syndrome, but oftentimes it can be missed and you don't even smell it. But some common questions that I ask patients on comprehensive like health history during a consultation is, do you see mold around where you live or where you're going to school or work or in your car? Can you smell something musty, a mildewy smell? Does your home ever get wet? Does spending time in a different location for a while, like if you go away, do you notice a noticeable decrease in your symptoms? But again, these are good pointers, but there are many people that tell me, actually the majority of people tell me, well, there's no mold. I'm not exposed to mold. I don't smell any mold. And invariably we get a mold inspector to their home or to their workplace or somewhere else that they're spending a lot of time at. And we find mold. The mold inspector finds mold. And when we run mold toxicity tests, we find mold. So these questions that I just said are good pointers, but they don't completely rule out mold toxicity. And look, the reality is for many of my patients, it's not a current exposure. It was something that they had in the past, but their body is not detoxing and clearing and methylating these mold toxins out of their body. So keep in mind, it may not be a problem for you currently as far as you maybe not exposed to mold currently, but it was a past issue that your body's not clearing out and the mold sort of circulating and living in the body and not being properly dealt with by the body. It's not being properly cleared out. So let's start from the beginning. Maybe I should back up a little bit and sort of define what I'm talking about, because there are upwards of around 300,000 species of fungus. And that's what we're really talking about, different types of fungi. Some fungi are beneficial, like edible mushrooms or the beneficial yeast in our digestive system, known as the mycobiome. It's all the beneficial yeast and fungus in our gut. It's not the same as the microbiome, which is typically referred to as the bacterial colonies of our gut health. But the microbiome is really beneficial. There are healthy yeast and fungus in our gut. Things like edible mushrooms, good things. There's nothing inherently wrong with these things. But mold is this general term for many different types of unwanted fungi. Mold and mold spores are just about everywhere outside and inside, wherever there is moisture, allowing them to grow and spread. Certain varieties of mold are problematic for reasons beyond just leaving stains on damp carpets or walls. They are linked to health problems and something that I see clinically so much. Toxic mold exposure has been identified as a potential trigger for inflammatory reactivity issues. Different practitioners have different ways of describing this condition, but what we typically call it in functional medicine is something called chronic inflammatory response syndrome, or CIRS, or C-I-R-S. There isn't a large body of evidence as far as the clinical research, the scientific literature, but it can be helpful in describing this collection of different inflammatory symptoms that some people experience in response to mold and other triggers in the world. So I find that mold is not necessarily the cause of people's symptoms, but an aggravator. For some people, it is the cause, and it definitely is the upstream driver. But for many people, it's just a piece of this larger perfect storm of variables, this confluence of factors that need to be dealt with. And it's really frustrating when you dealt with all the other issues of your health, but you're still stuck at this plateau, or you're not getting better, or you're spinning your wheels. So if you're having health problems in the first place, and then you're experiencing mold exposure at work or school, it can be this additional stressor on an already stressed out system. And oftentimes I see people resolve their main issue and then their bodies are able to handle that stress from mold exposure. Other times, again, mold, it really is the root of their issue. And we have to weed through lab tests and health history and treatment protocols until we figure out what's truly the upstream issue and what's the downstream issue. It's all on an individual basis. And that's the heart of functional medicine. It's bioindividuality. So we have to look at the case on a unique bioindividual basis. So what are the main difficulties in diagnosing mold toxicity. There are many potential symptoms, and it can be difficult to accurately link them to mold. Not only is mold a great imitator, just like Lyme disease and co-infections to Lyme disease, but it also can trigger or perpetuate the symptoms of other health problems, including asthma, allergies, and other co-infections. And again, one of the leading drivers of chronic fatigue syndrome that I see are people that are on that larger fatigue inflammation spectrum, and many autoimmune inflammation spectrum issues have mycotoxins, mold toxins as a component to their health puzzle. And also remember, mold is this little trickster that you can't always see in your home. You don't always smell it. You don't always see it. It's not always in your home. It can be in other places that you're spending a lot of time in as well, but it can be hiding behind walls, in vents I see a lot, or under floors, hiding in the background while the mold spores do their little dirty work of driving inflammation in people's body and polluting the air that we're breathing and really perpetuating our health issues. Intermittent fasting can have powerful health benefits, especially for healthy weight management and metabolism, but it can also be kind of challenging for some people to sustain long-term. You might struggle with hunger, sugar cravings, fatigue, low energy, irritability, and restlessness, or trouble sleeping. Peak Tea has some amazing fasting teas that I really love. They're my secret fasting weapon. The teas are blended with other functional plants specifically designed to shut down appetite, support your energy and mood, and enhance the benefits of fasting. You get concentrated catechins to support healthy ghrelin levels to combat hunger pangs. You get caffeine and L-theanine for sustained energy without the jitters, and polyphenols to support healthy skin, metabolism, mood, gut health, and so much more. All this in 5 award-winning flavors that won't break your fast. I even enjoy them when I'm not fasting. Different flavors have different health benefits. So I've gotten into a routine. Let me break down my routine with these teas. In the morning, I have the Bergamot Black Fasting Tea. It's gentler on anti-stomach and kickstarts energy without crashes or jitters. Black tea has antioxidants that feed the good gut bacteria, and bergamot supports mood. At lunchtime, I have the ginger green tea or the matcha green fasting tea. I love them both. They work wonders for digestion and post-meal sleepiness. They also make a delicious iced tea as well, with just enough caffeine for the rest of the day. And in the evening, I have the caffeine-free cinnamon herbal fasting tea, which squashes sugar cravings and supports healthy blood sugar levels. Peak's revolutionary tea crystals are ultra effective and pure with no prep or brewing required. Go to peaktea.com/WillCole and use code WillCole at checkout to get 5% off site-wide plus free shipping when you purchase a bundle. You can even shop my own curated fasting bundle that we put together for Intuitive Fasting, my book. There's a reason Peak has over 15,000 five-star reviews. Try it for yourself, risk-free, with their 30-day satisfaction guarantee. You either love it or you get your money back. With summer upon us, we need to get back into healthy habits. The fasting teas are selling fast, so be sure to stock up. That's peaktea.com, spelled peaktea.com/WillCole, and use code WillCole for 5% off site-wide plus free shipping when you purchase a bundle. I'm consulting patients 11 hours a day at my functional medicine telehealth center, and I can't tell you, it's on an hourly basis. I'm seeing some sort of gut-centric component to somebody's health issue. Whether they have digestive symptoms or not, the gut is such a central part to overall health. But at the same time, many people just settle for digestive symptoms because it's their everyday, and they don't realize that just because something's common doesn't necessarily mean it's normal. So gas, bloating, constipation, IBS symptoms, heartburn, there's so many digestive symptoms that people just settle for. But again, 75 to 80% of our immune system is living in your gut. So this is not just about digestive symptoms. This is also about the systemic, far-reaching implications of gut health issues. So the trillions of beneficial bacteria in our gut, known as the microbiome, are crucial to our overall health. They break down food, teach your body how to recognize threats, and supports your optimal immune strength. Feeling your best requires that you have as much good bacteria living in your gut as possible. Unfortunately, it doesn't take much to deplete your supply. Stress levels, one round of antibiotics, poor food choices, exposure to chemicals like glyphosate, or a viral infection can all really do a damage on your gut microbiome. And that's why I am a big fan of Just Thrive Probiotic. I recently had Just Thrive's founder and microbiologist on the podcast. They're a wealth of knowledge on all things gut health, so make sure to check out that episode. I loved it. Just Thrive Probiotic is vastly different because of one word, survivability. See, most probiotics die well before they ever get to your gut. Even the supposedly special probiotics in the refrigerated section are, in effect, dead on arrival. Think about it. This makes sense. If a probiotic can't survive at room temperature, how can it possibly survive your 98.6 degree body temperature? Just Thrive Probiotic is different because their proprietary strains are designed to survive. When they sense that conditions are about to get rough, they put up a natural endospore shell, which acts like an impenetrable coating. This allows the strains to pass through your stomach acid that's strong enough to dissolve metal and endure the bile and enzymes of your digestive tract, which pulverizes most travelers on contact, to arrive fully intact in your intestines and ready to go to work. In fact, studies have proven that Just Thrive Probiotic arrives in your gut 100% alive, delivering maximum digestive and immune health benefits. Personally, I've added Just Thrive Probiotic to my daily routine and I'm loving it. I highly, highly recommend it. Go to justthrivehealth.com and use promo code WillCole at checkout. Again, that's justthrivehealth.com. Use promo code WillCole to get 15% off your order today.
As a parent, do you ever wish someone could just whisper some realistic and trustworthy support in your ear and not make you feel awful for not having all the answers? Well, that's what I'm here for. I'm Dr. Aliza Pressman, developmental psychologist, parent educator, clinical professor, and I'm a mom. My goal is to make your parenting journey less overwhelming and a lot more joyful. Please join me every Friday for new episodes of Raising Good Humans.
So some of the toxic mold that we measure on labs, one of them is Aspergillus. And we're looking at different mold toxins that Aspergillus can release, like aflatoxins and ochratoxins and gliotoxins. Another mold that we look at is Penicillium, which can release different metabolites as well, other mycotoxin metabolites. Another one that we see oftentimes is Stachybotrys, which is your classic black mold, and the different mycotoxins that Stachybotrys can release. And Fusarium is another type of mold species that can release mycotoxins. And then Citronin is another mold mycotoxin that can be released from multiple different mold species. So we're quantifying that on labs, urine tests that we'll talk about later in the episode. But the main categories of mycotoxins that we can look at that have been shown in the scientific literature to drive different health problems are aflatoxins, ochratoxins. Those are the two main ones. And then fumosinins is one, and zearalenone is another type of mycotoxin. I see those less on labs. I would say the ochratoxins and the aflatoxins and the gliotoxins are the highest ones that I see on diagnostics. In addition to the symptoms and health issues that I mentioned earlier, some other problems that can be driven by mycotoxins or mold toxins are things like headaches, anxiety and depression, insomnia or trouble sleeping, mood swings, and chronic pain. Now look, what I just said, a lot of things can drive these issues. We see these symptoms like check engine lights on a car. Just because you have the check engine light on doesn't necessarily mean it's driven by mycotoxins. It is a piece of the puzzle for some people's, their health puzzle, but for other people, it's not that. So that's why I kind of put mycotoxins like Lyme disease and other pathogens like this as these great imitators or great mimickers, because just because you have these check engine lights on, there's a lot of possibilities here. All I'm saying is if you're trying everything under the sun, but you're not getting where you need to be, if you've ran lots of labs but haven't looked at mycotoxins or other pathogens like this, I'm saying look into it, because you don't know what you're dealing with until you look there. And you have to know what you're up against to do something about it. So I don't want to be alarmist here or make sort of this broad sweeping overgeneralized statement and say mold toxins is the cause of everyone's issues. Certainly, let me be clear about that. But it is something to consider if you've looked at many other avenues and doing all the things, quote unquote, but are not getting where you need to be on your health journey. So after a health history, one of the things that I do with my patients when I'm consulting them online is ship them labs wherever they're at in the world to substantiate that health history, to look at the stones, so to speak, that are most likely to have something underneath them. So we're asking them a lot of questions about things like mold. We are digging deep in their past health history. Maybe it's not a current exposure. Maybe it was a past issue. I mean, look, we see people all around the world that are exposed to mold in many different fascinating different ways that they recall when we start kind of going back in time and asking a lot of questions. And keep in mind that you could be in a dry, arid area and it's the home itself that could be leaking as far as the piping and plumbing is concerned. But so you could live in Arizona. I've seen people in Arizona. I've seen people in Kuwait. I've seen people in high desert areas that still have mold issue because it's not an external environmental issue. It's their home itself isn't breathing properly is how the sort of the mold industry describes it to me. As far as the mold inspectors and remediators are concerned, certain homes just aren't breathing appropriately. And then there's a leak and then that can grow mold even if you live in a dry, arid area. Anyways, so we are in conjunction with looking at our labs from a functional medicine perspective, we, if it's appropriate, we are finding a local mold inspector to see if it's a current exposure or it was a past issue. We're coordinating that as well. And it is remarkable to me, and it never gets old when I see if it is a current exposure, the mold inspector will find a certain species of mycotoxin and mold species growing in their home or their workplace or car. And it's that same mold toxin we can substantiate on labs. And we know at that point that that current exposure is at least a component to their health puzzle. They may have been exposed to other mold in the past, but they're being inundated with it currently. And that's slowing down their recovery. It's slowing down their healing journey. And then another remarkable component to these labs are when I see moms and kids have the same mycotoxin show up on labs, and you can see family members that are exposed to one specific type of mold toxin. And then we can see if it's a current thing or a past thing and really kind of be clinical sleuths, Sherlock Holmes, to see what the context of their health puzzle is. Anyways, so the labs that we run, some conventional immune markers like C3A and C4A, these are blood immune markers. And I have my patients run this test to determine the presence of a specific type of an immune response. Basically, it has to do with histamines and inflammatory response because mold toxicity can trigger histamine intolerance and mast cell activation, which a lot of my patients have. And sometimes I discover a lowered C3A level when someone is suffering from mold toxicity. I kind of find that correlated. And sometimes C3A can spike with people with autoimmune issues, but more dependable, specific to mycotoxin issues or mold toxin is a C4A. When C4A is, it's definitely a more dependable marker when it's spiked, when someone has a mold toxin overload. Another lab that we run is MSH or melanocyte stimulating hormone. It's a brain hormone. It's a hypothalamic hormone. And when the brain is stressed out and being impacted from mycotoxins, you'll see a functionally lowered MSH level oftentimes because basically the whole brain and the immune system is stressed out. So that will suppress MSH production. Another lab that we run in this space of mycotoxin is a mycotoxin urine test. It's a very beneficial lab to know the specific type of mold pathogen, what type of mold toxin is being excreted in urine. Many people that have detoxification impairments and their body's not clearing these things out prior to the urine mycotoxin test, we have them take a biofilm disruptor to sort of allow the body to clear these things out more effectively. It's not always needed, but for someone that's really stubbornly sick, that's not detoxing well at all, not methylating appropriately to support some methylation and detoxification and some biofilm disruption support can help get accurate data as far as the urine mycotoxin test. Now, it's interesting that over time when we're working on that person's health and we're getting them healthier, they're feeling better, their overall labs are improving. Sometimes you can see mycotoxin levels in the urine come up when we retest in a few months because that person's just better at detoxing and methylating and clearing that stuff out. And that's actually a good thing. And the person already knows they feel a lot better. So even if we see higher mycotoxin tests on the retest, it has to be put in context because the person's overall health's improving. They're just clearing that stuff out, and that's what we want. Now, when you're talking about mycotoxin and it's driving different inflammatory problems and autoimmune issues in the body, it's important to look at the bucket analogy when it comes to understanding these issues. So some people have massive buckets, right? It's their genetic tolerance for stressors. Some people are eating like crap, drinking, smoking, not sleeping very well. I mean, they're just not very healthy at all, but they can get away with it, so to speak. They'll probably pay for it later on in life. And everybody has their own tipping point for and threshold for these sort of stressors. But many of our patients that we see have the smaller bucket, so to speak. They have different methylation gene variants, different endocannabinoid gene variants, different gene variants that kind of shrinks that bucket, shrinks that genetic tolerance for stressors, they're going to overflow a lot easier. And that's unfair, right? I mean, they look at their family members or their loved ones and they say, what the heck, man, I can like eat cleaner than most people and I still am struggling. And it's like, I have no wiggle room. I have no ability to just eat whatever I want, so to speak. And we can't change our bucket size. We can't change our genetic tolerance for stressors, but we can change what we put in the bucket. And that's what I'm always trying to talk to patients about, because it's like, okay, let's look at the genetic component of this. Yes, some people are more sensitive to things like mold and food sensitivity and different compounds in the environment. And some people have a bigger tolerance for that. Let's understand the bucket size and let's look at what's filling up that bucket. Let's look at things like mycotoxins and other pathogens and other toxins and other variables that cause that overflow, that tipping point, that straw that broke the camel's back that's triggering these inflammatory cascades in the body. So we're looking at genetic testing oftentimes with patients. So people that have gene variants to the HLA gene and the MTHFR gene variants and other methylation gene variants, because that can definitely show a genetic predisposition for people that are genetically more mold sensitive and their body's not detoxing and clearing this out. So the majority of the world can be exposed to some level of mold and have the proper antibodies and enzymes and methylation capacity to detox and clear these things out. But there's a smaller percentage of people that when they're exposed to mold, their body can't handle it. It's going to recirculate and can grow in the body and drive these inflammatory cascades in the body. So that's when you see many people that have family members or they have a roommate and their roommate or loved one is fine, but they're not. So many people will tell me, well, it can't be mold because my family members are fine, but I'm not. Well, that doesn't always mean it's not a current exposure, because maybe your family members have the proper ability to clear these things out and detox these things out, and maybe you don't. So we have to look at genetic variability and back to that bioindividuality when it comes to the body's ability to handle these things. So that's an important point to make here. So once we've ruled in a component of mycotoxins to your health puzzle through lab work that you've been exposed to mold, whether it's currently or in the past, the most important thing you can do is to see if it's a current exposure, because we can work on the best mycotoxin protocol and clear these things out. But if you're constantly breathing these things in and being exposed to it, it's going to really slow down recovery. So oftentimes I will coordinate having a local mold inspector come to the home or workplace to see if it's a current exposure. So there's a great online directory from the National Organization of Remediators and Mold Inspectors that we use, and there's other resources as well. And there's other at-home direct-to-consumer tests as well that people can run. But I prefer getting an expert in there just to make sure that something's not missed. I've seen many times where the patient orders the mold test themselves, that things get missed. And then we get a mold inspector in there and then we find the mold. So I've really never seen a case so bad that remediation was not possible. It depends on the amount of mold damage that's there. But definitely, if it's a current exposure, you have to look into getting that remediated. We deserve to know what we're putting in our bodies and why, especially when it comes to something we take every day. Ritual's clean, vegan-friendly multivitamin is formulated with high-quality nutrients in bioavailable forms your body can actually use. What you won't find? Sugars, GMOs, major allergens, synthetic fillers, and artificial colorants. Plus, the fresh taste and delayed-release capsule design makes taking your vitamins super simple. I love it because it has everything you need, very convenient. And look, I mean, our food isn't as nutrient dense as it once was because of soil nutrient depletion. I could go on and on about this. Multivitamin is a great tool to give your body the raw materials it needs to operate at optimal function. So Ritual is the multivitamin reimagined. A multivitamin should contain key nutrients and forms your body can actually use to help fill gaps in the diet. No shady extras. Ritual's delayed release capsule design delivers high quality nutrients, including vitamin D3, in just 2 daily pills. Ritual is made traceable, another reason why I love it. You always know what nutrients you're taking and where they come from, thanks to Ritual's one-of-a-kind visible supply chain. And Ritual is designed with your life stage in mind. They have different formulas for women, men, and teens, and Ritual makes healthy habits super simple. Your multivitamins are delivered to your door every month with free shipping always. You can start, snooze, or cancel your subscription anytime. And if you don't love Ritual within your first month, they'll refund your first order. No questions asked. Get key nutrients without the BS. Ritual is offering my listeners 10% off during your first 3 months. Visit ritual.com/Will Cole to start your ritual today. This episode is brought to you by Public Goods, the one-stop shop for sustainable, high-quality, everyday essentials made from clean ingredients at an affordable price. Everything you need from coffee to toilet paper and shampoo to pet food. Public Goods is now your new everything store, thoughtfully designed for the conscious consumer. Rather than buying from a bunch of single product brands, Public Goods members can buy all of their premium essentials in one place with one beautiful, streamlined aesthetic. Public Goods searches the globe to find clean, healthy, eco-friendly, and innovative products. I really love them. We actually use the cleaning products here at the Functional Medicine Center, and also I love them at my home as well. They ethically source and obsessively develop each of their products to be free of unhealthy ingredients and harmful additives still common on drug and grocery store shelves. They are committed to making their products healthy and safe for humans, animals, and the environment. Knowing what's in your products and where they come from is super important. Small changes in the way we shop can make a big impact on personal health and the world at large. They actually use a membership model to keep costs low for us and pass on even more savings to their customers. Best of all, you can make your first purchase with no obligation. They actually plant one tree for every order placed, which is really cool, and incorporate sustainability into every part of the company. Join hundreds of thousands of others who have switched to the new Everything Store. We worked out an awesome deal just for the Art of Being Well listeners. Receive $15 off your first Public Goods order with no minimum purchase. That's right. They are so confident that you will absolutely love their products and come back again and again that they are giving you $15 to spend on your first purchase. You have nothing to lose. Just go to publicgoods.com/Will Cole or use code Will Cole at checkout. That is P-U-B-L-I-C-G-O-O-D-S LICGOODS.com/WillCole to receive $15 off your first order. As far as mycotoxin protocols are concerned, we definitely do tailor them based off of the other variables. Because remember, it's not just mycotoxin issues. There's a larger context that we need to understand. And there's many different variables to take into consideration. But starting with cleaning up your diet is definitely a good starting point. Lower carb and ketogenic diets, as long as they're clean, nutrient dense, well-formulated, sort of a Mediterranean ketogenic diet like Ketotarian, which is the topic of my first book, and I talk about it in intuitive fasting. Both intermittent fasting and a ketogenic diet, even if it's cyclical, for time therapeutically can be a great foundational tool to support methylation, support gut health, support brain function, mitochondrial function, all of these really core infrastructural pathways that we need to be supporting this person. It starts there. That's not going to be everything the person needs to do, but it's the foundation. Because remember, you cannot supplement your way out of a poor diet. You have to start with food as like the supportive engine to bring about optimization of certain pathways that are impaired because of my mycotoxins. So start with a good intermittent fasting protocol, lean in low and slow if you're new to that, a clean ketogenic diet to support this beta-hydroxybutyrate pathway in the body. So this amazing epigenetic modulator of beta-hydroxybutyrate, this ketone that your body naturally produces from a clean ketogenic diet like Ketotarian and in intermittent fasting that's flexible, both of these will support beta-hydroxybutyrate and these amazing pathways for autophagy and lowered inflammation and improved BDNF or brain-derived neurotrophic factor, improve mitochondrial function. I can go on and on. I mean, these are really important things to make sure that we are supporting during this person's healing journey. Another thing to think about when it comes to food is mold in food, that even if it's not the primary mycotoxin that's driving their symptoms, mold tends to release mycotoxins when they feel threatened. They do it to sort of preserve their space. So if you have two different competing mold exposures for a primed immune system and already the immune system's flared up, added mycotoxin burden and load will exacerbate symptoms and make things worse. So going on a low mold diet, in addition to what I've just mentioned, is definitely important as a contributing factor to somebody that's already having inflammation in their body. It could be stressing out that already stressed out immune system. And look, for some people, it is food mold toxins that is driving their current symptoms. So we have to look at the specific mycotoxins that I mentioned earlier. And there are some mold toxins that are found more exclusively in food. But oftentimes they find it's a bit of both. It was some environmental exposure, whether that's currently or in the past, and the mold toxin is making things worse. So definitely looking at foods that are higher in mold. So things like coffee. Coffee is definitely can be higher in mold. So definitely go for brands that are doing third-party testing or at least some testing to measure mycotoxins in their mold. Purity Coffee does that. Bulletproof does that as well. Dave talks about this at length, Dave Asprey, but Purity Coffee is another one. Rice, definitely look at grains, but rice can definitely be, out of the grains, one of the highest mold grains. Rice and corn, if I had to say, but all grains. Looking at wheat and rye and barley and spelt, all grains can be higher in mold. So definitely be mindful of that if you're eating a lot of those things. Looking at dried fruits, which can be healthy, but it also could be for someone that is mold sensitive. Things like dried fruit can be a source of mold. Nuts and seeds definitely need to be looked at. They are healthy, right? They're good for many people, but for mold sensitive people, if they're eating lots of nuts and seeds and having lots of nut flours, for example, they can be higher in mold. Processed meats can definitely be another source for mold. Alcohol, things like wine can be higher in mold. So people that are drinking like more red wine or beer or brandy or whiskey, these are some of the highest mold alcohols. So sticking with things like white wine or someone that's third-party testing for mold or tequila, not that I'm advocating people to be drinking these things, but looking for lower mold alcohols as a general rule is a good idea. In addition to your home and your work or your car, where mold can be hidden, looking at your foods that I, like I just mentioned. Other places that I've seen mold exposure are any sort of coffee machine that you put, use the little cups, and that can be a source of mold. So definitely look at coffee machines, especially the cup machines, because the liquid that's sitting in there, the water that's sitting in the coffee machine could definitely be a source of mold. Looking at diffusers, essential oil diffusers can be a source of mold. Mattresses, I've seen it in windowsills. I've seen it on cutting boards, carpets and furniture. Of course, water pipes, toothbrush holders, looking at plants and cars, I've definitely seen a lot over the years. Now, as far as a natural medicine protocol, we tailor those specific to the labs because certain mycotoxins do better with different types of binders. But we're using different types of binders like zeolite, activated charcoal. We're using a variety of different binders, cholestyramine, even the pharmaceutical cholestyramine can be one way to bind these toxins out of the body. But my favorite probably is activated charcoal and bentonite clay and zeolite. Those are the three more broad spectrum, well-tolerated, starting off low and slow. And for some extra mold sensitive people that have, that are very sensitive to supplementation, we start with really low doses of something like bentonite clay, a single ingredient binder to help draw these mold toxins out. And then over time, as we're supporting methylation and detoxification and getting the immune system more stable and resilient, we start emptying that bucket, so to speak, we can slowly titrate those binders up. And that's imperative for people that are not clearing these things out. In addition to binding, we're also having them sweat. So they're using infrared saunas and we're coordinating the best sauna for them, or at least doing some sort of Epsom salt bath or getting out in the sun, which can be quite therapeutic in sweating some, or exercising, just making sure they're sweating every day and working up to tolerance is definitely important to support detoxification and making sure the body's clearing these things out. In addition, other supplements that we will integrate into somebody's protocol are things like glutathione or things that support glutathione, which is sort of this body's master antioxidant to support detoxification and clearing these things out. And many people that are struggling with mold toxicity have impaired methylation and detoxification pathways. So supplementation in this avenue, but also loading up on foods that can support methylation, like sulfur-rich foods like broccoli and cauliflower and Brussels sprouts can also support proper glutathione production. And even supplementing with something like NAC or N-acetylcysteine can help to support intracellular glutathione as well. Another tool that I bring into many patients' protocol is supporting a healthy level of NAD plus in the body. NAD plus stands for nicotinamide adenine dinucleotide. It's an important coenzyme found in every living cell of our body. And NAD plus is responsible for repairing damaged DNA and supporting overall cellular health. So one of my favorite ways to support NAD plus is to supplement with a special form of vitamin B3, which you may have seen it on the market, but it's nicotinamide riboside, or NR plus, is a great way to support NAD. It's basically a precursor to NAD plus in the body. And I mentioned it earlier, if it makes sense for you based on where you live and your, you know, health history, but getting healthy doses of sunlight, it can be very therapeutic, and fresh air can be very therapeutic as well, to help the body support methylation appropriately, because vitamin D is a sort of master governor of methylation to support detoxification pathways and clearance of these mold toxins. So in addition to the binders and the sweating and the detoxification support that we'll integrate as well, we also will bring in antimicrobials, antifungals. So different herbal blends of different herbal antifungals is definitely a component to everybody's protocol. We start off low and slow again, but just rotating antifungals is definitely a good idea, because if one antifungal isn't as effective, just a synergistic, more broad spectrum approach I find to be the most effective clinically at getting their labs improved, getting the person feeling great over time. So some herbal antifungals that will integrate are things like garlic, oregano oil, pau d'arco, olive leaf extract, caprylic acid, barberry, grapefruit seed extract. These are all natural antifungals that I find to be quite therapeutic. Cat's claw is another one. I can go on and on, but we definitely tailor antifungal protocols in addition to the binders and the detoxification support. In addition to mycotoxin-specific protocols that we build based off of patients' health history and labs, some core things that I need to make sure are optimized for my patients is methylation. Methylation, which I've been talking about throughout this episode, should be defined, I guess, for people that are new to this, but it's this big interconnected biochemical superhighway, if you will, that has to do with supporting detoxification pathways, hormone production, metabolizing many different amino acids. And it's just needed for optimal health. And many people that have mycotoxicity, they have really impaired methylation pathways. And then on top of that, they could have different methylation gene variants like the MTHFR gene variant, whether that's one gene variant or two gene variants. We look at the A1298C and the C677T. These are two different locations at the MTHFR gene, which is a master gene that provides these methyl donors, or these carbon hydrogen groups that facilitates methylation throughout the body in a positive way. But many people that are more mold sensitive that could have these methylation gene variants, not just MTHFR, but many other gene variants that we're looking at as well, are generally speaking not methylating as well on top of that, just from a genetic standpoint, let alone the added stress of the mycotoxin. So for us to be supporting methylation appropriately, but judiciously, we're not causing over-methylation, but slow titration of methylation support, starting with food, of course. But then on top of that, giving people methylfolate and methylcobalamin, these B vitamins that are really needed. But you want to be definitely start off low and slow, because people that are struggling with these inflammatory problems tend to be more sensitive to B vitamins like methylfolate and methylcobalamin. So you want to be, again, progressive, but sustainable. Another thing that I need to make sure it's optimized is vitamin D. Vitamin D, which we talked about sunlight throughout this conversation, but we actually endogenously need sunlight to produce vitamin D. It is the sunshine vitamin, and it's responsible for over 2,000 different pathways in the body, really regulating inflammation levels and mitochondrial function and lots of different things when it comes to the immune system. I see many people that are supplementing vitamin D appropriately in theory, but you run labs on them and their vitamin D is still low, in part because the body's expending so much vitamin D because of mycotoxicity and these other pathogens that can be at play from a co-infection standpoint. So sometimes dosing a bit higher on the vitamin D standpoint to get that level up to an optimal range, which is about around 60 to 100 for people that are struggling with these different chronic infection patterns. So it's about 10,000 IUs of vitamin D3 with a K2, which is another fat-soluble vitamin that's really needed for the balancing and regulation of the immune system. And then retesting to make sure that you're not overdosing on vitamin D, making sure that it's in that optimal zone. So these two methylation supporters, vitamin D and the B vitamins, the methylated B vitamins, are paramount to really giving the immune system the raw materials it needs to properly handle the recovery that we're going to be leaning into for these people's recovery during their protocol. Another thing that I find quite advantageous for someone struggling with mycotoxicity is phosphatidylcholine, or PC, which you can take orally, and then there's also IV PC that I've seen to be effective as well. So PC, or phosphatidylcholine, is a phospholipid. It's a phospholipid that's really good for cell membrane function and brain function and just sort of cell membrane repair, which many of these people need over time. So I find that a PC support as well as the methylation support with the vitamin D and the B vitamins would be core things that are really important for these people struggling with mold toxicity. And then one other thing comes to mind clinically is iron deficiency. Somebody that's already having fatigue because of mycotoxins, if anybody has low ferritin, which is the biomarker for stored iron, or other markers that are low on an iron panel, whether that be iron and iron saturation, you want to look at a full iron panel, because iron deficiency with mycotoxicity is going to be very difficult to recover until you start really getting that iron optimized, because it's going to allow everything that we're going to do in the mycotoxin protocol to happen more unimpededly, because we can actually get oxygenation of the tissues and the body can repair and heal a lot faster when it has the raw materials, in this case, iron, to facilitate that repair. Those repair mechanisms. So those are some additional supplements that oftentimes I take into consideration. Oftentimes they're based on labs. So I'm not just wantonly and flippantly giving somebody supplements. We're really looking at the baseline from a data standpoint and then dosing appropriately and then retesting and seeing how the needle's moving in the positive direction or not, because everyone's absorption is different. And when you're taking into consideration gut health, which is a major governor at 75 to 80% of the immune system, which we are supporting in addition to all of this stuff as well, supporting gut health. Some people have impaired digestion and absorption, and we aren't just what we eat, we are what we absorb. And you could be taking in good foods that are nutrient dense and supplementation, but we are ultimately what we absorb, and supporting absorption and digestion and proper gut health is very important, because you could be taking good foods and supplementing again, but gut health is another player to that person's nutrient deficiencies, if there are any. So then we'll clinically monitor the person and coach them and guide them and adjust their protocol in real time. And that's the science and the art of functional medicine. And what I do is that some people respond very well, and we can go off of natural medicines and aspects of their protocol that are obsolete, that aren't needed anymore. We can open up their food protocol that they, you know, they couldn't get away with it at the beginning, but they can as their body's recovering, and we're retesting and not just subjectively monitoring their improvements, meaning i.e. they're feeling better, but we're retesting and substantiating lab improvements, looking at those immune markers that I mentioned earlier, like TGF-beta-1 and C4a, and we retest the mycotoxin test as well. Now, keep in mind, I mentioned this earlier, that you can see higher mycotoxins when we retest, but that means the body's clearing it out appropriately. But you'll see higher mycotoxins sometimes. Sometimes it's cleared right out by that time, and you see really lower levels of it. But you want to look at those immune markers and put it in context with the whole and look at how the person's feeling to understand their improvement. And then we refine and pivot and optimize the protocol as that person's improving. But look, the opposite can be happening too. The art of wellness when it comes to mycotoxins here is sometimes increasing dosages where we need to increase it, where I could put together a protocol for the person. And then as I'm clinically monitoring them and guiding them, we can see, okay, look, this binder isn't high enough. We need to increase this. But it's important to remember that I rarely recommend somebody with mycotoxin issues to push through detox symptoms or Herxheimer responses or Herx responses, because it doesn't go away. You cannot push somebody too aggressively with these sort of protocols. You have to be, you have to find that balance. And that's the art of it as well, is being progressive, but sustainable. And the goal here isn't to do too much too soon and cause tons of flare-ups. The goal here is to mitigate that as much as possible and find something that is therapeutic, that is effective, but it's still sustainable for that person. So it's always that balancing act of clinically monitoring them and coaching them and guiding them and adjusting their protocol in real time, because as their health improves, so will their protocol. So hopefully this was helpful, my friends. I know it's a lot of information. You can go back and re-listen to this as much as you want to, because it is a lot of information, but it's helpful. Hopefully it was helpful. I know it helps my patients out. If you want to learn more about all this information, I've written about these topics over the years. And if you want to learn more about the clinical work or the telehealth center, you can check it all out at drwillcole.com. Thanks again for listening to The Art of Being Well. If you have a chance, please rate and review the podcast here. And if you like what you're hearing, hit follow and pass it along to a friend. To see more, head to drwillcole.com/podcast. I'll be back again next Thursday, and I hope you will too. Talk soon.